Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
This is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton in our producer this morning. And, of course, the major story of the week, the passing of Queen Elizabeth II at the age of 96, 70 years as the Queen of England. And just to put that in perspective, can you imagine if you're British and you're under the age of 70, she is the only monarch, the only queen you have known in your entire life. And in London, within the past hour, they have formally proclaimed Charles the King. And the ceremony taking place with former prime ministers in attendance, including Tony Blair and Boris Johnson. Here are the formalities of the Accession Council.
Whereas it has pleased Almighty God to call to his mercy our late sovereign lady, Queen Elizabeth II, of blessed and glorious memory, by whose decease the crown of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland is solely and rightfully come to the Prince Charles Philip Arthur George. We, therefore, the Lords spiritual and temporal of this realm, and members of the House of Commons, together with other members of Her Late Majesty's Privy Council, and representatives of the realms and territories, aldermen and citizens of London and others, do now hereby, with one voice and consent of tongue and heart, publish and proclaim that the Prince Charles Philip Arthur George is now, by the death of our late sovereign of happy memory, become our only lawful and rightful liege lord, Charles III, King, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith, to whom we do acknowledge all faith and obedience with humble affection, beseeching God, by whom kings and queens do reign, to bless His Majesty with long and happy years to reign over us. God save the King!
God save the King!
That taking place within the last hour in London, and following that, King Charles III took the oath of office. He spoke briefly.
I, Charles III, by the grace of God of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of my other realms and territories, King, Defender of the Faith, do faithfully promise and swear that I shall inviolably maintain and preserve the settlement of the true Protestant religion, as established by the laws made in Scotland in prosecution of the claim of right, and particularly by an act intituled An Act for Securing the Protestant Religion and Presbyterian Church Government, and by the acts passed in the Parliament of both kingdoms for union of the two kingdoms, together with the government, worship, discipline, rights and privileges of the Church of Scotland. So help me God.
Charles III formally proclaimed the King, and there he takes the oath of that role. And you've seen many of the video clips over the past few days. You've heard many audio clips of Queen Elizabeth and Princess Elizabeth before becoming queen. And there were a couple that just stood out to me, and if you missed these, I just wanted to share them very briefly. This is Princess Elizabeth, October 13th of 1940. She's at the age of 13, and this is at a point where the children are leaving London to go to the countryside, but obviously she was a princess in the public eye, and here's what she had to say.
And when peace comes, remember, it will be for us, the children of today. My sister is by my side, and we are both going to say good night to you. Come on, Margaret. Good night, children. Good night, and good luck to you all.
Wow. And then we'll take you up to 1952. This is the new Queen Elizabeth, as she became the Queen at the age of 25 in 1952.
I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong.
That just gives you a sense of the span of her life and the span of her reign as the Queen of England. Now, yesterday, Prince Charles, now King Charles III, spoke of the family, and I thought this was kind of interesting.
I know, as my heir, William now assumes the Scottish titles, which have meant so much to me. He succeeds me as Duke of Cornwall and takes on the responsibilities for the Duchy of Cornwall, which I have undertaken for more than 5 decades. Today, I am proud to create him Prince of Wales, Tywysog Cymru, the country whose title I have been so greatly privileged to bear during so much of my life and duty. With Catherine beside him, our new Prince and Princess of Wales will, I know, continue to inspire and lead our national conversations, helping to bring the marginal to the centre ground, where vital help can be given. I want also to express my love for Harry and Meghan as they continue to build their lives overseas.
That's short and sweet about Harry and Meghan, but I certainly laid out the roles of Prince William. And we're now at 6:16. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Fairfax County, some accident activity westbound on 66 at Route 50 Fair Oaks. Now clear to the shoulder, but do watch out for brief delays there. Also, the ramp from Route 50 East to westbound 66 is scheduled to be closed this weekend until 5 o'clock on Monday morning for a traffic shift and permanent ramp opening. Earlier accident on 50 eastbound in Cheverly, right near Landover Road, has been moved to the shoulder. No residual delays there. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures, a little bit cooler into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight. Could be heavy at times into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
Currently in the nation's capital, 62 degrees on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and we've been running through some of the audio of the past couple of days, and actually of the past 70 years of the Queen's reign in the UK. And this was a very touching moment yesterday from King Charles III as he spoke of his mother, as he closed out his remarks, his first official proclamation.
To my darling Mama, as you begin your last great journey to join my dear late Papa, I want simply to say this. Thank you. Thank you for your love and devotion to our family and to the family of nations you have served so diligently all these years. May flights of angels sing thee to thy rest.
And that was the end of his remarks yesterday. President Biden spoke briefly after he had attended the British embassy. He signed the guest register there and wishing his condolences to the British people. And he spoke Thursday night very briefly, but this is what President Biden had to say about the Queen.
Before I begin, I want to say a few words about Queen Elizabeth. I just stopped by the British Embassy to sign the condolence book in her honor. I had the opportunity to meet her before she passed, and she was an incredibly gracious and decent woman. And the thoughts and prayers of the American people are with the people of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth in their grief.
Yes, of course, President Biden. We're at 6:19. This is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We're going to change things up a little bit this morning. Jim Trustee is traveling this weekend, so we're going to have John Gizzi give us a rundown on the week in politics, and then we'll spend some time with John Gizzi a little bit later on in the program on the life and legacy of Queen Elizabeth II. Also coming up, Jennifer Harper has some interesting perspectives on the Queen. And we're trying to, you know, bring some things to the show this morning maybe you hadn't caught this week. There's been so much out there and so many things to see and hear, but several things maybe you haven't heard in terms of perspectives and how people view the Queen. And that's coming up this morning. Also, Cheryl Atkison is back with us. She is typically on hiatus during the summer, out filming around the country and, for that matter, around the world. Cheryl Atkison back with us this morning. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us. We'll get the very latest on movement in Ukraine, Ukraine on the offense, and we'll get a read from Tony on that. And, of course, KT McFarland will join us later on, and we will get her perspectives on the passing of Queen Elizabeth and what that means to the world moving forward. So plenty to come on the Saturday Morning Update.
Making sense of your world.
I can't believe this.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
And I am so with you.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update, and that is what we try to do here, is make sense of the news. And I don't know about you, but I'm finding it so difficult to even read headlines anymore on my iPhone or on my laptop, because the headlines are just so misleading and deceptive, and in some cases, flat-out lies. Let me give you an example of some misrepresentation, in my opinion. The headline, Thursday at Newsweek, Joe Biden hammering Donald Trump in latest head-to-head poll. Joe Biden hammering Donald Trump. Now, that would, 10 points, 15 points? What does hammering mean? Well, if you get into the article, it talks about the YouGov poll conducted for Yahoo News found that Biden enjoys a 6-point lead among registered voters when it comes to another head-to-head contest. I don't know, is 48 to 42 hammering? I don't know that that's hammering, but it gets better and it gets more irritating, where he says the survey found that Biden leads Trump in a potential 2024 matchup with 43% to the former president's 40% among U.S. adults. So you have two numbers there. The 48 to 42 is one of them, where they look at the registered voters. But then when you look across the board at U.S. voters, 43 to 40. That's not hammering. That's within the margin of error. So deceptive headline, throw that one away. We got another one here. This is a gem. This is from Ross Story. Headline. And Ross Story I'm not familiar with, but the problem is that these stories pop up on my MSN news feed, so they look factual because they're there on the page. So here it is. The headline, Trump tweets prompted DOJ to investigate John Kerry because he, quote, annoyed the president. That according to a new book. So if you just skimmed over that, you'd say, well, you know, Trump's investigating John Kerry because he annoyed the president. It's, you know, just you glance over it, you say, well, that's just Trump being Trump. But if you go into the article and you get well enough into the article, it finally points out in the article that, of course, John Kerry was talking to Iranians during the Trump administration. And you may recall that there was some dialogue as to whether that was a violation of the Logan Act. So there were some things going on between John Kerry and discussions with Iran that indeed were irritating the president. But there's a little more to it than just the headline. Trump tweets prompted DOJ to investigate Kerry because he, quote, annoyed the president, according to a new book. And that's just a couple of examples of how tainted the news headlines are, the media is these days, and the obsession with the former president over Mar-a-Lago and the obsession with anything Trump these days is just mind-boggling. I mean, if you're within 5 feet of Trump, you're the enemy of the state, according to media. It's just mind-boggling. But I'm sure I am just preaching to the choir. 6:29, it's the Saturday morning update. And as I mentioned, we're going to be talking to John Gizzi first off this morning about politics, and then we'll have him back in the 7 o'clock hour and talk about the Queen. Jim Trusty traveling this weekend.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, King Charles III has been officially announced as Britain's monarch. The ceremony steeped in tradition and political symbolism this morning. For the first time, broadcast live, a council of senior politicians and officials gathered at St. James Palace in London for the accession ceremony. The first time the ceremony has been held since 1952, when Queen Elizabeth II took the throne. Mourners have streamed to the gates of Buckingham Palace in London to mourn the Queen they lost this week after 70 years on the throne. Beyond its size, the pilgrimage was remarkable for what it underscored, the many roles that visitors said the monarch occupied in the lives of those she could never know. Flowers, notes, and tributes dotting the landscape around the palace on the day that Queen Elizabeth's son, Charles, addressed the nation for the first time as king. The Justice Department and Donald Trump's legal team have proposed candidates to serve as an independent arbiter in the investigation into the top-secret information found in an FBI search of Mar-a-Lago. Lawyers for Trump say the so-called special master should review all documents seized by the FBI. The Justice Department says it does not believe the arbiter should be permitted to inspect classified records or take into account potential claims of executive privilege. 6:32, Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, watch out for an accident on westbound 66 before Virginia 688 in Markham. That is exit 18. That currently blocks the left lane. The accident eastbound at Route 50 Fair Oaks cleared. But keep in mind that the ramp from Route 50 east to westbound 66 is closed this weekend for road work. Also in the district, a portion of Maryland Avenue is closed between Independence Avenue and 3rd Street and Southwest for the 2022 D.C. Bike Ride event taking place. And that also has Pennsylvania Avenue closed between Constitution Avenue and 3rd Street. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures, a little bit cooler into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight. Could be heavy at times into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow into the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
Currently in the nation's capital, 62 degrees on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler, and we're going to change it up a little bit this morning. We got John Gizzi to join us a little on the early side as Jim Trusty is off this weekend. And then we'll join John again right after the 7 o'clock news and get into the big story of the week out of the UK, of course, the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. And we'll do that right after the 7 o'clock news. But, John, let's start off with some politics this morning because a lot of it going on. Bill Barr, the former attorney general, said the DOJ is, quote, getting very close to having the evidence to indict the former president, but they shouldn't charge him. The words of Bill Barr. How is that resonating?
Well, love him or loathe him, Bill Barr is listened to when his name in any news story is followed by three letters, DOJ. Only the second attorney general in U.S. history to serve two disparate stints at the Department of Justice. He knows the players in the department, knows where they're moving, and if he says that the Department of Justice and its prosecutors are close to an indictment for Donald Trump, be it for the activities of January 6th or for what FBI agents found when they raided his Mar-a-Lago estate. Barr knows what he's talking about. I'd believe it. But almost in the same breath, the former attorney general did say that he hoped it would not happen. The thought of putting a former president in the docket and having him tried for high crimes and misdemeanors as a private citizen is just not what America is about, and it's not reflected in our history. That's more attuned to other countries that are very unstable in terms of maintaining democracy. This reporter's view is that one must not second-guess Bill Barr when it comes to what DOJ is going to do, so let's just sit back and watch.
Not only is Donald Trump a former president, but Donald Trump is a potential rival for President Biden in the next election, so that makes it even trickier.
Exactly. And, of course, an indictment of Donald Trump could be something that, as Liberace used to say, make him cry all the way to the bank. His supporters will charge. It's a political witch hunt. And his numbers would probably go up in the polls, as they did after the Mar-a-Lago raid. One postscript on this, Rich, I have to say, is that, predictably, the former president did call his former attorney general a rhino, Republican in name only. This is a term that he uses frequently over incumbent Republicans he wants to defeat in primaries with candidates he says are the real deal, true conservatives. Bill Barr had a different take on this. He just shook his head and reminded viewers that at the age of 14, he was walking the streets of the west side of Manhattan handing out leaflets for Barry Goldwater for president. He said the whole name-calling is rather silly, and it's something that President Trump increasingly calls people who disagree with him.
You were at a press breakfast with a handful of journalists and the Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona. What did you learn?
Well, one thing, Secretary Cardona is very defensive about the president using the executive order to eliminate student loans. Forgiveness goes up to $20,000, and it will take away as much as $1.6 trillion of the student loan debt. However, it should be also noted, and he agreed with this, an independent study by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Now, let me make it clear, this is a nonpartisan group, estimated that the loans that are forgiven will probably be at the same level they were when the president issued his order by 2028. And when the cost of living is factored in by 2031, even higher. In other words, those people who are still battling to pay off student loans will find themselves in the same situation as those who can now take advantage of the federal forgiveness program. Secretary Cardona simply said that he did not disagree with this at all. But what he said is there has to be changes on things, greater parental involvement, greater teacher notification of things, a greater oversight of the whole process of teaching at all levels to make sure that debt does not accumulate in the way it has before. He seems to believe that when families, as well as teachers, are more involved in the process and watching all that occurs as their children earn their degrees, then we won't be back to it. Well, we'll have to see. In other words, he's counting against the need and the call for more forgiveness by future presidents.
John, a couple of primaries to discuss, one this past week in Massachusetts, one upcoming in New Hampshire.
Yes, the one in Massachusetts was historic. State Attorney General Maura Healey easily won the Democratic nomination to succeed outgoing Governor Charlie Baker, a centrist Republican. She, if elected, would be the first woman governor of the Commonwealth, not to mention the first openly gay chief executive in Boston. That's a lot of history right there. More history, but less attention focused on it, was the nomination of Republicans of a Trump supporter, State Representative Gerald Dial, as their candidate for governor. to no one's surprise, Governor Baker said he would not support his party's nominee. In New Hampshire, this coming week, a highly interesting and much-watched primary for the U.S. Senate to go up against Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan. The early frontrunner, longest candidate in the seven-candidate race, is retired General Don Bolduc, the U.S. Army veteran who is himself an admitted post-traumatic stress survivor, is calling for, among other things, defunding the Department of Education and the Department of Homeland Security. He preaches from a gospel of pure libertarianism. Donald Trump has not endorsed him, but much of the Trump organization is in the general's corner. Republican Governor Chris Sununu last week weighed in for Speaker of the House Charlie Morse, considered a more centrist Republican, but someone who might have a better chance against Senator Hassan, the winner of the closest Senate race anywhere in the country 6 years ago.
An AARP poll in Florida is rattling nerves among some Republicans. What's the latest there?
Well, incredibly, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, considered an easy winner for re-election and a very likely Republican presidential hopeful, has been shown in most polls to be leading his Democratic opponent, former Governor Charlie Crist, in double digits. However, this poll, conducted by the AARP, showed the opposite, that DeSantis was only narrowly clinging to a lead, 50-47% over Crist, himself a Republican-turned-Democrat. That's a bit of a surprise, but it should be noted, in 1970, popular California Governor Ronald Reagan was considered a big winner and future presidential candidate. He took time from his own reelection bid to help other Republicans running for governor in other states. That's precisely what Ron DeSantis' strategy has been. He was campaigning in Pennsylvania last week for the Republican nominee for governor, and he will go elsewhere. He's in demand. And as it turned out, Reagan was reelected, but by a much smaller margin than anticipated. This may be the case with Ron DeSantis, but it should also be noted, Reagan did make it to the presidency. Maybe DeSantis will, too.
While we're on the president's legal troubles, certainly a lot of attention is being paid to Eileen Cannon these days, the judge in West Palm Beach, and not a lot of it's favorable.
No, it certainly isn't. We are hearing reports that she was someone who has written very little, as if that's a qualification to be on the federal bench. And, oh, yes, she's a Trump appointee and a member of the Federalist Society. Judge Cannon's crime in the eyes of the liberal media was writing an opinion that was favorable to Donald Trump. In other words, that a special master would have to be appointed to look at the documents the FBI took from the Trump residence in Mar-a-Lago and determine just what is in there and what the public can see. Now, the Justice Department says it's already prepared to release exactly what it was looking for and what it found. But the judge said the special master has to have approval of this. I've talked to sources in the prosecutorial realm who say that the special master, whom Judge Cannon will appoint, will almost certainly be someone who's been a former federal prosecutor and has worked in cases involving secrecy before. But again, it's the process that so irks Democrats and liberal editorialists. One postscript, special master, special prosecutor, independent counsel, these are all relatively new terms just that have come up in the last few decades as a result of legislation that was written and enacted by Democrats.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. We will continue our conversation with John right after the 7 o'clock news as we look at the life and the legacy of Queen Elizabeth II. 6:46, it is the Saturday morning update, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, watch out for accident activity on westbound 66 before Virginia 688 in Markham, where the left lane is blocked. In Falmouth, a disabled vehicle now being reported on northbound 95 between U.S. 17 Warrington Road and the Centerport Parkway. That takes up the right lane, so use extra caution there. In the district, a portion of 7th Street will be closed for the D.C. bike ride event taking place. That will be closed between D Street and Independence Avenue. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures a little bit cooler into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight. Could be heavy at times into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
64 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:47, Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper with us every weekend. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, keeps us up to date on everything going on around town. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to get your perspectives on the passing of Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah, well, we have this is a very complicated moment, isn't it? I mean, it's a huge media moment. It's an emotional moment for a lot of people, for a lot of different reasons, and you're just going to keep seeing a lot of coverage about it. But I just wanted to give our audience this morning the insider view on a lot of this. For example, all of the plans that are going to be taking place for official ceremonial events, they're called Operation Unicorn. This is according to Buckingham Palace, and there are going to be 10 days of commemorative events culminating in a state funeral at Westminster Abbey. They will also have 2 minutes of national silence. They'll have a service at St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. Also, the burial will be at King George VI Memorial Chapel, also located in the castle. Also, if you're wondering what the lineage is here, very, very easy and helpful. A guide to that came through the Daily Mail, a British publication, and they say next in line for the throne is Prince William, 39, followed by his children, Prince George, 8, Princess Charlotte, 6, and Prince Louis, 3, with William's brother, Prince Harry, 37, after that. And Charles's wife, of course, we all know who he is now, or will be anyway, Charles's wife Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall, will officially become the Queen Consort. They don't know quite yet when Prince Charles's coronation will be held, but they ask you to keep in mind that his mother, the Queen, was crowned 16 months after King George VI passed away. And also, if you're wondering about all of those beloved pups that the Queen had, mostly Welsh Corgi dogs. She also had 100 horses that she really favored. A lot of people were very worried, what's going to happen to the dogs? And this became a major news organization draw. A lot of people covered this. But essentially, at the time of her passing, the Queen had 4 dogs. She had 2 Pembroke Welsh Corgis, 1 Corgi Dachshund mix, and a Cocker Spaniel. And everyone wants to know what's going to happen. And so according to a couple of news organizations, they say that the family's going to step in along with a lot of the folks who took care of the pups when the Queen was with us. So everyone from BuzzFeed to the Washington Post to lots of other news organizations covered this, but that's kind of a little update. More to come, I guess, is the best way to put it.
You know, while we're talking about history and the reminder that Queen Elizabeth II took over in 1952 when Harry Truman was in office, and that was not long after the end of World War II. And there's something new at the World War II Memorial?
Yes, absolutely. This is kind of some nice news. How about that for a change? But anyway, Friends of the National World War II Memorial, that is an interest group, very active, out of the nation's capital here, and they report that they're going to be adding President Franklin Roosevelt's D-Day prayer to the memorial itself. This is kind of a new addition, and they're going to restore the Circle of Remembrance. This is a contemplative garden that's located over in the northwestern corner of the memorial site. And the D-Day prayer, if you're unfamiliar with this, because I was not particularly and had to look it up, but I was very glad that I did, it's going to be appearing on a bronze plaque held by granite piers. So it sounds like a pretty big installation there. But on June 6, 1944, on live radio, President Roosevelt asked his fellow citizens to please join him in prayer. And this was, of course, D-Day, and that was when the American troops were landing in Normandy, and apparently the whole nation pretty well prayed with him. They're going to have the completion of this project in December, and it will include the D-Day prayer plaque and the new garden. And we'll just say who the designers were as the landscape architecture firm Ohm Van Sweden and Associates. Hope I got that pronounced right. And the construction is already underway down there, and they received some very generous support, $2 million from a Lilly Endowment Incorporated fund, and also Grundley Construction Company Incorporated is the general contractor for the project. And according to the National World War II Memorial Friends, they say this will be an important and meaningful addition that will complete the memorial, which is visited by nearly 5 million people each year, providing contemplative space to reflect on and remember this, that more than 400,000 American souls lost during World War II. So something to look for, and they've got a great website. Again, that's the World War II Memorial Friends. So take a peek.
Well, let's get back to the bad news. What's the latest on Nancy Pelosi?
Well, this has been very interesting. This has been a report that came out, created quite a ruckus when I put it in that way. But anyway, here's the news. Apparently, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi would like to become the ambassador of Italy after the midterm elections are over. This is according to Fox Business Network anchor Maria Bartiromo, and she's a pretty pretty good news person. But anyway, she related all this on Tuesday this week. She wrote, President Biden is holding the Italian ambassador position for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi as she plots her next move after the 2022 midterm elections. And he's holding the spot for the speaker, sources say, which is one reason he has yet to fill the position since taking office. And speculation earlier this year that a Pelosi ally and former Wall Street executive wanted the job, and that shifted with the increasing likelihood that the GOP takes the majority here. So anyway, again, according to Maria Bartiromo, an excellent reporter, she says there was no clarity yet on how a new U.S. Senate would react to a Pelosi nomination, but there was a mixed reaction to her in the role from sources this week. Biden ambassador nominees have been confirmed by the Senate, but Biden has been slow to name ambassadors to several countries, including Italy. And so far, only 27% of 194 ambassador positions are currently without a Senate-confirmed official. So something to watch, anyway.
Well, here's another website that I guess Facebook and Twitter can ban from the Internet. What do you got going on here?
Let's just talk about something that the Republican Senate Leadership Committee has launched this week, and this is a whole new merchandise line. They launched this whole thing on Wednesday to help Americans across the country, as they say, cope with President Biden's disastrous leadership and upcoming visits to their areas as he campaigns for local Democrats. And, my gosh, it's called the Biden Survival Kit. Again, this is coming from the Republican Senate Leadership Committee. They're serious about this, but they have a pretty good humor little collection in the Biden Survival Kit. They include a coffee mug with a motto, Surviving Biden's America, One Sip at a Time. There's a tote bag bearing a phrase, Clean Up on Aisle 46. Ooh. That's pretty clever. And an official screaming pillow. And that's for anybody who's frustrated by the White House right now and the policy that comes out of it, and they just want to scream, so they get their own screaming pillow. And if you're wondering about this whole new line and a brief introductory video, you can go to BidenSurvival.com. And according to Andrew Romeo, he's communication director for the committee, he said this survival kit will help Americans endure 2 months of pathetic attempts by Biden and his state Democrat allies trying to skirt responsibility for supporting the failed liberal policies that destroy the economy. So they're pushing and shoving there. But again, that's BidenSurvival.com if you are in need of a Biden survival kit.
So a big deal to both parties is turnout in the midterm elections. And Democrats seemingly picked up a little momentum in energizing their base with some of the recent legislation that's been passed and the Supreme Court decision. But what are the Republicans up to?
Well, let's just say the Republicans are getting busy. That's a real good way to put that. You know, the midterm elections are just about 2 months away, still a lot of time there. But the Republican National Committee has slid into high gear in its public outreach. They sent over to the Beltway just a couple of numbers about what kind of a public outreach they're talking about, and they're calling this kind of another historic milestone, which means lots of people are hearing from Republicans. They have made a record-breaking 50 million contacts with voters around the country as the countdown to Election Day continues. And during the 2018 midterms, the committee did not hit 50 million voters until late in October. So they're way ahead of schedule, could really go on to record-breaking numbers here. And according to committee chairwoman Rona McDaniel, she said that the Republican Party is united and firing on all cylinders heading into November through a combination of our state-of-the-art, data-driven ground game, strong candidates across the country, and historic investments in minority communities. Republicans have never been better positioned to retake majorities in the House and Senate. And she also said Republicans have the tools, the message, and the candidates to beat the Biden Democrats and win in November. And that's certainly a rah-rah moment there for Republicans. And that 50 million valuable contacts, that's quite a bit this early in the game.
And there you have it from Inside the Beltway, Jennifer Harper at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. And thank you very much, as always.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, everybody.
7 o'clock news coming up. Then we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.